don't need a man who's got it made. Always looking for that renegade. I calls it like I sees it. A spade is a spade. A good man is a thing of yesterday. Yeah. They don't want them a good man.
My new favorite song, brother.
I love it too, man. It's really great. I'm glad you found it.
Yeah, that was one of those, just got lucky. I just love that song. So it was like it was made for us.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, so I know we spoke, but good morning again.
Good morning to you, Sean. How are things? From
Tottenham.
Tottenham, you got it right. Tottenham. I was thinking, you kind of Germanized it the first couple of times. Tottenham.
Tottenham.
But it is Tottenham.
If we didn't have a name, I think we should have called this Live from Tottenham. I think that would have been a great...
Yeah,
like Wrexham. What's the one the
Wrexham. Yeah,
Mike Reynolds does Wreck It and Wrexham or Wrexham.
Anyway. Wrexham. Yeah.
So I'm doing all right. You just asked. I wanted to say I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right, but I'm trying to stop the double answer. Maybe I'll send it. Maybe I'll change it to triple.
All right.
I'm all right. Yeah. I'm doing all right. I had a pretty good weekend. I guess it's Wednesday already. This week has crawled by. Like I was 1,000,000% sure that yesterday was Wednesday. Like,
yeah,
for sure. Even did a couple things, texted my wife that had something to do with Wednesday. And I think she thought I would lost my mind. She had no idea what I was talking about. I had a pretty good weekend. I went over and visited my son, and Shonda was helping him rebuild his deck. And she's the man of the house. And I
she's the handyman.
I baked some cookies and took care of the dog and got us some lunch. So, you know, we
you're in touch with your yin and yang side there, then that's good.
Yeah, it is what it is. You know, she taught her son how to do everything, and she's still helping him, and that's great. They got a good relationship, and I was happy to be there. I did make a typo. My dad had called me, and he doesn't call that often. And then I didn't answer. Then he texted me and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just over at my son's, and my wife is here helping him fix his dick."
Oh boy! Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And my father's like, "What? What?" And I went, "Oh my! Yeah. That's the typo of all typos. His deck." D-E-C-K. He's helping fix his deck. But luckily it's only his deck. But yeah, anyway, it's besides that, yeah, it's working. I've been working a lot this week and just getting ready for the long weekend. Our country's birthday is coming up this weekend. So
yes, that's right. Yeah. Long weekend. You like fireworks?
I do. We always took the kids and went. I like it. We always watch from a nice distance. Yeah. One year we went downtown and stood under them, and what a difference fireworks are when you're right under them. Beautiful. It's beautiful. But
that is, yeah.
But honestly, the last few years the kids aren't around anymore, and we always sit there and it's the evening and you go, "Do you want to go down?" I don't know. I don't know.
This is part till 9:30 or 10. You're like, "Oh, I'm kind of tired." I'm like,
shouldn't we be in bed? I don't
know. Yeah.
So I haven't gone for a while, but you know, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, good.
How about you? What's going on in Tottenham?
Yeah, well, we talked before. I've had a little bit of a rough go here. You know, we talk about sobriety. I've had a couple slips, which hasn't been great.
It happens.
It does happen. You know, I suppose the first step is admitting you're powerless over alcohol for a long while. I believed that to be true until I didn't. And I tested the waters a week ago, Thursday. I do this regular pool with the guys for the Euro, and I always organize it. And they're like, "Oh, let's meet at Tom and Jerry's," which has been the pub that we went to for years and years and years. And all the way there. I was like, "It's okay. I just have a couple non-alcoholic beers." And you know, the waitress knows me. She's like, "Oh, Creemore." And I was just like, yeah, it was just that simple. It was a yeah versus a no, and it was a build up for a while coming, I think, because I've had some issues with my relationship, and I sat in that for quite a while, and thankfully I, you know, had my therapist I was meeting with weekly, and we talked through a lot of crying and a lot of pain. I had come to an acceptance that, you know, the relationship wasn't working, that we were both, you know, we weren't treating each other very well, and accepted most of the blame for that, because I'm still, you know, I'm still a recovering alcoholic, and I still have a lot of stuff that I'm dealing with. So yeah, I kind of, I, in the back of my mind, I think sometimes I just think, oh, I can do this. I can drink kind of normally. And I did that day. I had three beers. I came home. I didn't think about it for a while until I thought about it again. And it was, you know, the following week, last week, I went again to watch a game, and I had three beers. I know that's kind of my spot, pints. You know, I drove home, so I'm not going to say that I didn't. I was fine. I felt good. We had some laughs. It was nice. It was like a reminder of the past and being feeling kind of normal, right?
Exactly.
And then last weekend, I just really got into it. I was really in a dark place, and I kind of got it a little deeper into it. And then, of course, the hamster wheel starts. You just beat yourself up. And we talked on the weekend, and we'd been talking about this podcast, and the topic, of course, that we decided on is suicide and death. And not gonna lie, I felt suicidal. There's no doubt. It's a dark place when you get there, and it's hard to imagine overcoming a lot of the wreckage that I've caused in my life. Emotional wreckage, financial wreckage that we've talked about. It's hard to see a path out of that at times, because when you've been working on that wreckage for 30 odd years, it's a lot of wreckage, and it's doesn't exhausting. Take 5 minutes. It doesn't take 5 minutes to get rid of it. You know, it takes time.
And
it takes dedication and
gets have unhappy, been,
you know, selfish at times, 100%. Because sometimes I only know how to take care of myself. I don't know how to take care of others. And so selfishness does come up. And so it's fitting that we're having this conversation today, because it certainly was on my mind. I called you on Sunday. I was in it pretty bad. I was crying a lot. I was dark.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm still here.
You are.
Still doing the podcast. And, you know, that's a really big part of my life right now. And I know it's a big part of yours.
Because it is. It
can be like one of those things that keeps you going, man. It does, you know?
Now, you say that, but if you cared about this podcast, you were feeling suicidal, you knew this was going to be about that. You imagine the impact would have been for me if you'd have gone through with it. I could have had the podcast of all podcasts. Like, I could have been, oh my God.
You're just always looking for that.
If you're really giving a shit, you know, but no. You had to be okay, yeah.
I did.
But... And going back to the drinking, and of course, anybody listening knows I'm a smartass, and I'm kidding. I don't mean that, of course. But that's the problem with addiction. Is you're right. The three, we all want to feel like we can use like a normal person, but we can't, right? And the three beers wasn't hurting you. But the problem with having the three beers is then when something is going wrong, you thought, well, I already drank, you know. If you'd been sober for a year, you might have been like, well, shit, I can't do this. You know, I got a year. But, you know, it's like the same way when you're dieting, you know, you can be dieting. I'm going to sneak a chocolate bar. And then like, oh, well, you know, I had one, you know, and it's just.
Yeah.
But you know what? I run a group called Life Ring. It's kind of an alternative to the NAAA programs, which are fantastic programs, but they're different. And how long were you sober until you had those few beers a couple weeks ago?
Well, I got to about 7 months. That was, and then I had that Easter episode. Right. Then I had another couple months after that. And then now it brings us to the latest few.
So if you look at about 10 months, you've drinking maybe 4 days, 5 days out of those 10 months, right? Well, I always say, man, you've got to remember that, you know, I always use this analogy. It's a simple one, but if you drive 100 miles and you go back a mile, you've still gone 99 miles. You don't go back to step one. You don't go. I know that in AA they give you a chip and that's all great. But in my opinion, you do not go back and need your day one chip. You got fucking 9.5 months under your belt.
Yeah.
Just keep moving.
I agree with that. I do. Most people, if you talk to them, they won't agree with that because they always talk about continuous sobriety. I've been in meetings with people who say that I've been sober on and off for 13 years and this kind of statement. So it is rewarding to get chips. Don't get me wrong. And it is rewarding to get through the program and to not drink ever again. Of course that is very, very rewarding, but it is a little bit, I find that you get a little resent. I found that I was resentful when I did have that slip and that I had to start all over again. It was like, oh my God, like,
it's punitive. It's not.
It feels punitive. It does.
And it's, I don't find that supportive. I don't need someone to slap me down when I'm struggling. I need someone to pick me up, you know?
No, and I've met many people in the program that have, you know, been sober 29 years, but have slipped in those years. And yeah, I mean, I guess you could say they didn't quite get the right aspect of the program, but I certainly don't fault them.
I had a friend in my group that I made, a really good guy.
Yeah.
This guy was like my right-hand man. He was like steady as a rock. The improvement he made in his life and the things he did were unbelievable. A big event happened to him. I won't say any of it because I'm not outing him.
Yeah.
And he came to the meeting and he told me he drank.
Yeah.
It's just like he just went to a liquor store, bought a bottle of drink.
Yeah.
And I said just what I said to you. I said, well, so what? You know what? Yeah. And he hasn't drank again. It's been years. He's doing great. That was nothing. It was a blip. Who gives a shit? Now, if I'd have taken him and just, hey, you know, well, you're back to day one and then not all your progress has meant nothing, blah, blah, blah. I don't think I think he could have still kept drinking. I don't think it would have helped him one bit. It meant nothing. And I treated it like it meant nothing. I'm not saying it wasn't important or significant, but whatever. Come on.
Look,
we're humans.
You're ready until you're not ready. I think, you know.
I hope you never drink again, Chris, but I'm not going to jump on you because you do. I mean, I hope you don't. It's not good for you. It's not good for your life. It's not good for most people's lives.
No, it's not.
And a big difference between a lot of people that drink and addicts is addicts admit it. There's a lot of addicts out there that don't admit it, but they're still addicts. Just because they don't admit it, it doesn't make any difference. At least we've admitted.
Yeah, and I've had conversations with a few different people about various forms of addiction. Look, alcohol's not great, but like, I don't know. I'm not justifying it by any means, but if I smoke crack, I feel like that's just
crystal meth. It's a little
worse. I mean, I don't know. That's maybe that could be judgy on my part.
It's a little judgy, but I mean, and pain's personal. I always say that to people. My pain is my pain. And if I'm broke, I know there's people on the street who go, I'd like to be broke like you. Yeah, well, I agree with that. There's people starving somewhere. There's people have nothing, and I feel bad for them, but that does not change my problems. My problems are still my problems. I have to get up every morning. The only brain I have is this one.
Yeah.
It's a fucked up brain, and the shit I see and the way I see it, man, it's my... Okay, we get to on topic or we're never going to get off.
Yeah.
We should have just called this Chris and Sean shit and just talked about it. You know? Maybe that'll be next week. What the hell?
Yeah. Maybe that'd be a lighter episode. I don't know.
It might be. It might be worse. All right. So let's get on. Today we are going to talk about a heavy subject. And before we start, I want to get of course, I'm going to ask you for the definition. But before we do any of that, because we're talking about suicide, anybody who happens to be listening to this podcast, I want them to know that suicide is never an option. It's don't ever do it. Call me if you think you're going to do it. And if you don't know me or don't want to call me, it's so simple. Instead of dial 911, dial 988. That's it. 988 is a suicide hotline.
Yeah.
And even if you think to yourself, well, I'm going to do it regardless, just give them a call first anyway. Just if you're going to do it, you're going to do it. But do me a favor. It's so easy. It's 988.
Thank you. Yeah.
And just move forward. So, okay. What's the definition of suicide?
Yeah. Well, actually, I dove into this a bit, as I often do, because I think we all know the main definition of suicide. Suicide means ending your own life. And it goes on to say it is sometimes a way for people to escape pain or suffering. But I dove into it a little bit more. And the next question that comes up is, what are the four types of suicidal? And they were defined by this German psychologist named Durkheim. And the four types are egoistic, altruistic, anomic, and fatalistic. Okay? So I'll dive into those ones a little bit more.
Please, because I don't know how
to. Altruism is the belief in or practice of disinterested and selfless concern for the well-being of others. So it's a state of like real selfishness, obviously. You've got like you've separated yourself. Anomic is socially disoriented. Synonyms are alienated, disoriented, unoriented.
Isolated by yourself, yeah,
completely,
yeah.
And of course, egoistic is all about your ego, and it's limited to or caring only about yourself and your own needs.
Yeah,
so that's, you know, that's true. I think those are all, you know, anyone who's contemplated suicide has had all of those feelings.
Absolutely.
A feeling of extreme loneliness.
But it's extremely selfish. It's the most selfish act you can do.
I totally agree. It is, because you're what you leave behind is worse than what, you know, is worse than actually the, I think, the experience.
It's like taking your loved ones and they're sitting in the room and you toss in a hand grenade, close the door and walk away. That's what it's just, and everyone else has to deal with the shrapnel that you left behind, man. It's not, it's not good.
No,
I remember, and we're going to talk about this in detail, but I remember my father said it after something that happened about with the suicide. And he said, it's just so final. Like, it was my mom. And listen, I had a lot of problems with my dad and all that. And we're going to talk about it. But I remember something, it broke my heart when he said it. Like, he said, she didn't even give me a chance. Like, you know, they had a lot of fights and a lot of problems, but like, it was just like, she won it, man. And she gave the death blow. Like, it was like, cause it just, you can't, there's nothing you can do. You know, people can walk out, they can leave, they can do a lot of things, but if you commit suicide, that's the winning goal. Like, you can't, no one can counteract it. It's amazing. It's amazing. So where do you, I think we're going to talk about death a little bit too. Did you do a death, I don't think you need a definition for death. It means you did.
I didn't, but I can. I mean, I didn't. I was like, I felt like that was pretty obvious, but I will just.
Oh, yeah. Blacken.
The action or fact of dying or being killed. The end of the life of a person or organism.
That's pretty much what I thought it was. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get started. I'll start. I've got a few things I want to talk about suicide. It's a big part of my life, unfortunately. I lived my childhood, a lot of people thought my family were the chosen family. A lot of my friends did. They thought, like, me and my sister, my dad and my mom, my parents were young. On the surface, we got along really well. And you know what? I think in reality, we got along pretty well. I mean, as a family, we would hang out a lot. We'd play cards. We'd take little trips. Dad was young and hip and cool, so all my friends liked him. And my mom was a sweetheart, and she would come over. My friends would be there on grocery day, and we were a tight family. And I was sheltered from, you know, any kind of death or big problems. Like, it was always going to happen to somebody else. There really wasn't even a lot of sickness, you know. It just wasn't happening to my whole family. Like, just wasn't. You know, I started dealing with some deaths, and we'll talk about later on, because we're talking about suicide right now. Like, you know, my grandmother died, and that was the first real big one for me. But suicide hit my family when I was a kid. my grandmother's brother committed suicide. I knew him, but I mean, I met him like once, you know, and I was a little kid, like I mean, maybe 5 or 6, and I didn't find out till years later that's what happened to him. I just knew that he was gone. And I think he shot himself. Like it was pretty bad. And I know I have a limited company called William Freeman, and it's actually named after my great grandfather, my dad's dad's dad. And I have no evidence he committed suicide. I don't know, but he definitely drank himself to death. I mean, he was a severe alcoholic, would drink vanilla, like mouthwash, like whatever was going. And he was a very successful man, owned a business in town. Like he was, you know, just drank a lot. But so, you know, there was some suicided things going around. I'd heard a couple other rumors about older generations, but then it hit me. I was with, I had, you know, me and my wife were younger. I'm going to be honest, I can't remember if we were married or still going out. And my mom tried to commit suicide. And I found out, I went to the hospital. I remember when she came out, I'll never forget this. She had charcoal around her lips because they had put it in her, they made her throw up because she'd taken pills. So they give you charcoal to make you get sick.
I
And I
see.
remember how sad she looked, and it broke my heart. But I'm going to tell you, this is on me. It didn't break my heart enough because I didn't take it that seriously. I back then we tend to side with my father a lot of things back then. And dad would, you know, I think he would admit this, I don't know, but he would kind of bit us against her, like she's doing this and she's doing that, and she's doing, and mom didn't say that kind of stuff about that. And I was young and selfish and wrapped up in my own life. And I was at the hospital and made sure she got home. And I asked her if she'd go into counseling. And I didn't think about it again. I don't think she went to counseling. I don't think she got any support from me or her husband. I think my sister tried, but definitely not the help that she absolutely 1000% needed, Chris. Like it just. And I have to live with that guilt to this day because, you know, a couple of years later, she tried it again and she succeeded. And, you know, if she hadn't have tried that first time, I think I would have been alleviated a lot of the guilt that I live with, because I didn't take it serious enough. And I know I can give myself all kinds of excuses. I was young. I you know, I didn't know how to deal with it, didn't know how to handle it. But I just, mom didn't have a chance. And you know, and now I've dealt with some of it, and she didn't have a chance. She didn't have a chance. She was in no win situation in her marriage, and she hated herself. She thought she was overweight. Mom was a little overweight, but mom was beautiful. I'm not just saying that because she's my mother. I mean, she was, there's lots of men thought my mom was attractive, believe me, but she was very hard on herself. And you know, dad didn't help that, but I don't want to just sit here and pick on their marriage. That's not my spot. But you know, I'll never forget it. I'm gonna just talk briefly. But I was at home. I worked for my father, and we used to go to North Carolina for a trade show every year. He was down there on his own doing it. And I had talked to my mom when he was gone and see if she wanted to do something. She was kind of isolating, which she did a lot when dad was away. She was very isolated. And dad called me and said, "I can't find your mother." And I was like, "Well, like, what do you mean you can't find her?" And he said, "I just can't get a hold of her." He said, "Could you go up to the house? It's about 15, 20 minutes away, and just find her for me. See what's going on." And I wasn't going out there thinking anything more than maybe she was just isolating or whatever, or she wasn't there. She liked to shop. She had a shopping addiction. I thought maybe she wasn't going to be there. My wife was with me, and the car was in the yard, and I started knocking on the door, and then my stomach started sinking, and I could hear the dogs in there, but you know, had to I think there was a key outside. And this was a beautiful, beautiful home. They lived in a very exclusive neighborhood. And I went in and started hollering, and all the nightmares you can think of. It was just like, what? I went upstairs, saw her laying in bed. And I see it every day, brother. I see it every day to this day. I think I see it like it was yesterday. I see her every day. I was scared to death to touch her.
Sure.
And she was ice cold. And it's just like, I was a mama's boy, you know? And she was just gone. And she's been gone ever since, you know? That's what I like to say about suicide with people. Like, she's been gone ever since. I didn't get a redo. Didn't get to say goodbye. Didn't get to tell her I loved her. Didn't get to help fix. Just, I didn't get nothing, man. And she was just fucking gone. And I, my wife, of course, had to deal with it too, you know? And I called dad and told him he was, and you know, to dad's, you know, I felt bad for dad at that point because he was a long way away, of course, you know, like he was 24 hours away. And Mike James got on the phone. I talked to him and he bought a ticket to get dad to Montreal. And then another company we work for, South Shore, they sent him home on a private jet. A Boeing jet, because they were partners with Boeing. And I went out to the airport and I was they took me right to the runway at the Moncton Airport, and the captain from this plane called me on my cell phone and said, "Is this Sean Paul?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I got your father with me. We'll be on the ground in about 10 minutes." And but you know, like after I found Mom, it couldn't have gotten worse, Chris. Like my sister found out, she was at work about an hour away. She collapsed as far as I can tell. She'd never come up. She didn't even come to the house. I think my, God love her. I love my sister so much. She just collapsed and couldn't deal with it at all. Her husband showed up, but then the police showed up. Yeah. And there was a note, but no one saw it at first. No one can find it, including me. And the police started questioning me like I'd done something.
Yeah, like, you said that
the previous you know, sentence. Like shit, man. Like, and then while they were there, I found this note. And I'll never forget it because it was written to my father. And at the bottom, it just said, "Tell Sean I love him." And I'm like, that's what I get? Like, yeah. You're my mom? And I get a little note saying, "Tell Sean I love him," you know? Yeah. And then I was sitting in the living room and I watched The Undertaker carry her out. And I just never saw her again, you know? And then we met as a family, and I blame my dad for this. He knows that, but I guess he wanted to protect her reputation or something. And he said, "I don't want to tell people that she committed suicide. Let's say she had a heart attack."
Right.
So that's what we started telling people.
Yeah.
But then people ask you questions. Oh, was something wrong with the heart? And then like, you know, I didn't have this big story built up. No. So we go through all this bullshit, you know, and we have the funeral and all that. And then people start coming to my dad's house to see him, and he starts telling them the truth. And I'm telling a lie that he told me to tell. He's telling the truth.
Yeah.
And you know, the problem, this podcast is Sean and Chris. So I'm gonna talk about me. Yeah. I didn't get much sympathy or empathy. It all went to dad. Even in our job, everything was, "How's your dad? How's your dad? Is your dad okay? Is your dad okay?"
Yeah.
And the odd person that would say, "Are you okay?" I would hug them and cry because no one asked. I mean, I had my friends that did, like my buddy Rob and Cindy, they were lifesavers. But then, you know, then it's been 20 some years of dealing with it. Like it's some people listen to me talk about it and they'll think, "Oh, did this happen yesterday?" And like, no, it was 20 some years ago. It might as well have been yesterday. And then, you know, since then, like, you know, I won't name their names, but I had a friend come to visit me, a really good friend that meant the world to me. A few years ago, she came to visit us. So we hadn't seen her in years, and I was so happy to see her. And she was, you know, she seemed pretty good, and she was going through a divorce and blah, blah, blah. And then she went home and she killed herself, you know. And I didn't realize she was just saying goodbye, you know.
Right after you saw her?
Wow. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she'd come up just to say goodbye to me and a few other people. And I didn't know she was in that darkest spot. Like, you just can't see it. But then I lost another friend connected to her not long after that to suicide. I've dealt with way more of it than I wished I'd dealt with. And then, you know, the part that blows my mind, Chris, is that even though I always swore I would never be suicidal because of what mom did to me, you know, she destroyed my whole adult life. And I thought it was the most selfish, brutal act she could do. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was all against my father and about my father.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought, yeah, that's fine. But what about me and my sister and your grandkids? You know, what about the rest of us? You know, we mattered too. But mom had a lot of problems, young married, a lot of stuff. But then even though I swore I'd never do it, because I know what it does to families. I've been suicidal many, many times. And I mean, I don't know if I should be saying this or not, but I mean, I have cut my wrist twice and stopped it. So, you know, I read some statistics that said that men try to commit suicide a lot more than women. But women are much more successful at it.
Right.
So women, when they decide to do it, they're going to do it. And then not that long ago, I was suicidal. I had the letters written. I had the plan. I was parked where I was going to do it.
Yeah.
And I called you. And I don't know if you really thought it was that serious. You handled it well.
Yeah,
and you saved me, man, because you said a lot of things, but then you said, that's all your boys are going to remember you for.
Yeah,
you said that's what they're going to remember you for.
Yeah,
Sean, the dad committed suicide, and I couldn't live with that. I couldn't live with that, and of course I shouldn't have been suicidal. I have a beautiful wife and great friends, and I have two best boys in the world, and daughter-in-laws I love, and dogs, and family, and my sisters, and. But
yeah, it doesn't
life
change.
Is hard, man. Life is fucking hard.
I've
been in debt with the government my whole adult life, and that's my fault. Some of it's my fault.
Yeah.
Not all my fault. And I've had a lot of health problems. And life just wears you down, brother. Like, I don't want to hurt anybody else. I don't want to do that to my family. But sometimes I don't know how to carry on. I don't know how to get up every morning. I've told you this before. My eyes will open and I'll be like, okay, another day. And then it just starts, oh, yeah, this is your life, Sean. And I just go like.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've rambled on and haven't let you speak at all.
No, I you know, Sean, I knew this wasn't going to be easy. Any child who has to find their mom after she's killed herself, that, you know, we talked about it. There's only one thing worse. That's your child.
The other way.
And I, you know, you even said like your mom comes next. It's just, it's true. I mean, if your dad, I don't know, that seems to be the order to me. I don't see how it could be any worse than those. Thank you for sharing that. It's a lot, and I appreciate you doing it. I think, as we talked about it, it's helpful to talk about it. Of course it is. And I think we've also talked about the fact that you haven't really done the counseling work, and yeah, I know you want to. I know it's sometimes it's it, I know it's financial, and that's unfortunate.
Now,
I think a lot of these services, if they were free, somehow there would be a lot of people that would be taking advantage of that, and a lot of people that may not end up in a suicidal place. And so I don't know, hopefully one day that's something that's real. Therapy is, it's so important. And I, you know, a couple things I guess that I reflect on, of course it wasn't your fault. I think, you know, in your heart, it wasn't your fault. I've believed for a long time, but more so in recent years, that we have a soul that comes from, I think, a higher power. I do think that we come to Earth to learn lessons and do things, and that our spirit or our soul carries on. And I think ultimately that your mom probably looks down on you and is proud of you. And, you know, although she may be gone, she's still with you. Like, I do believe that. And I'm sure she's proud of you for carrying on. I'm sure she's sorry that, you know, she left you with this burden and this sadness. I don't think that she would have ever wanted that for you, but she was in a place where she just didn't know what else to do. And that's really, really sad.
Thanks for saying that.
You know, I can only assume that things, all her things in her own life led her to that place. You know, maybe she, I don't know about her childhood. I mean, you say that, you know, your parents didn't get along great and you know.
Yeah, she didn't have a lot of breaks. And the last thing, I just because of what you said, the only thing that me feeling so suicidal did for me was it made me understand her more. It let me forgive her because I get it.
Yeah.
I always say mom's life with my dad was like the U2 song, With or Without You. Like,
yeah.
She couldn't live with him and she could not live without him. And I mean, that's like a rock and a hard place. That's an absolute truth. She could not live with the man and she literally could not live without him.
Yeah.
Where does that live you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not much room there.
Did she have addiction problems? You said she's stopping.
Mom was taking drugs for sure. I don't mean street drugs, prescription drugs. I'm not sure which ones. I know Ativan, which is a dangerous drug.
Yeah.
Prescribed way too much. I think they call it Xanax in the States.
Right.
I think she might have been on a Percocet or something, but I have no proof of that.
Yeah.
She even got addicted to nose sprays. Like doctored nose spray, but it blew out her sinuses. She used them so much. Mom was a food addict for sure. She liked junk food. Mom had a shopping addiction. You wouldn't believe, Chris. Like when we had to go through her stuff, like she had hundreds, if not thousands, of clothing with tags on them that were too small for her. She always buy clothes too small for her, which had to be part of her self-image, right? Like she didn't want to buy a bigger size or whatever. And mom had a gambling addiction. And that was played a big part at the end. But that wasn't a big problem. It kind of was like the straw that broke the camel's back at the very end. But no, she had a lot of addictions that I didn't even understand until she was gone. You know, I have so much more understanding and knowledge about this stuff now because of the work I've done with my own recoveries and running my own programs. Like if I could be Sean Pauly today, back then, like I think I could have saved her. I think I could have saved her. I could have came a lot fucking closer to, you know, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you'll never know. And so I guess it maybe gives you a bit of solace to think that you could have, but
who knows?
I don't know. You know, I think that's, I think that, how do I even put it? I'm sure that you wished you could, of course. And I'm sure probably she wished you could. But
well, it's the graduations and the marriages of my kids. And both my sons got married to beautiful girls and beautiful days. And all I could think of was, why isn't my mom here watching this? Like she should be here. She didn't die in a car accident. She didn't get cancer.
Yeah.
She took her own life and she should be here. It's such a waste. And you feel, you miss her, but you feel bad for what she lost. You know, these beautiful moments that she should have been a part of and she would have been a part of. Right. But, and I don't want to say this and then I want to hear some stuff about your life in this, these kind of subjects, but just before I go further, I don't want anyone to think I'm diminishing it. What I'm talking about here is a outline of what happened. I mean, it would take hours and days and weeks to give you all the details of why she did it and the effects of what she did and feelings and angers and all this. But I'm touching on it here today because we do a podcast that we're trying to help people.
Yeah.
And I thought it was important. It's an important subject to me. And I think it's important to talk about because I don't want anyone else to do it.
Yeah.
I want people to understand that you're going to hurt the people you love so much.
Yeah.
And there's always another answer. There's always, there's always from a hopeless guy.
Yeah.
you taught me that one day when I was parked out in the woods. There's always hope. There's always hope.
Yeah.
And anyway.
Yeah, it sounds like she was definitely suffering, and she was sounds like she was depressed and had a lot of addictive characteristics. And unfortunately, she didn't see a way out. We've talked about a variety of ways out. We've talked about therapy. We've talked about service, prayer, you know, meditation, connection with God, all the things that we talk about that are definitely things that can help you get free from depression. And
it's a big
I reflected a little bit. I thank God haven't had a lot of suicide in my life, but one individual that I knew when I was a kid, I don't want to get into any details. I don't think they'll ever hear this, but they were a very religious family, very religious, especially the mom. And I was friends with the brothers, and they had a daughter. And again, seemingly very, very happy family. Although I found like they were strict, like they, like I say, very religious. But they all seemed happy, you know, nice home, jobs, all the, you know, like nothing seemingly looked too awful on the surface. But their son committed suicide when he was in his teen years.
Oh.
And I know that for the mom, I mean, had it like crushed, like ruined, and you could just see it, like she was vacant, gone, couldn't
walk.
How could this happen?
I call it walking wounded. They just never look the same.
And it scared me. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't. And I hadn't seen them in years because we had moved. We had moved away from where I knew them, and but I couldn't imagine what it would have done to that family. And again, this is what we taught, the wreckage of that. I mean, you're gone. You've kind of relieved.
Your pain's over.
Yeah, your pain's over. But carrying that for the rest of them, I can't even imagine.
You basically take your pain and just give it to all your loved ones. You just, here, I'm done with this. Here, you take it. It's not fair. It's selfish. I get mad at my mom a lot too. It's selfish.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of, it's a mix between complete sadness and almost anger and resentment. Yeah,
you're absolutely right. Like, you got it.
It's like, yeah. But outside of that, I mean, some people in high school and different people that I knew.
Did you go through that where you and your, when I was in high school, especially the French university for some reason in my town?
Yeah.
It was like a suicide every few months.
Really? Like,
and I didn't think about it too much at the time because, you know, I was young and self-centered. I didn't know these people. But when I'm thinking back now, my goodness, there was a lot of suicide. And that was 30 years ago, 35 years ago.
Yeah, I don't think it was as bad where I grew up. And I maybe it was just the demographic of the town that I lived in. You know, it was middle upper class, I guess. And maybe the problems weren't as bad, you know. I know when, just as you mentioned that, I think a lot about indigenous people and the environments they grew up in. I mean, alcoholism and addiction and suicide rates are so high.
It's awful. It's awful the way they've been treated as a whole.
Yeah. And I you mentioned it earlier about men attempting suicide. I know that, like, for example, we've all seen, you know, mass shootings and things in the US especially. And they're 99% white men. that are doing these things. And we've talked about it on some other episodes. You know, we've talked about the patriarchy, you know, men's burdens, different things. And I think things are coming to light a lot more these days, but there's a real, I think there's a real inherited guilt in a lot of us about maybe how things have transpired in the world and how, you know, men have kind of fucked things up a lot.
Absolutely.
And this is a bit of a side topic, so I won't delve into it, but there's a lot of internalized burden in that, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, I think the world would be much better if women had run it and not men. I really believe that.
Question.
It would just be so much better.
And
you're right. And a lot of these men that, these kids and men that do these shootings, kids do it in schools and that, and they end up dead. You know, they either kill themselves at the end or the cops shoot them. They call it a way people call it death, suicide by cop. And it is a very selfish thing to do, to put that on a cop. A cop is just a person. They do not want to shoot somebody. No. So now you put it on them as well. They have to, you were too chicken to do it yourself. So you make some other man do it. I mean, it's awful. It's awful.
And you take a lot of innocence with you, of course. That's even worse.
But. Well, I think sometimes these people are just suicidal and they can't do it. So they have to do something so bad they can't come back from it.
Yeah.
You know, or then there's the, this isn't a personal connection, but I'll admit this, but me and my sons, we watched a lot of wrestling when they were young. And I used to watch with my grandfather, and we loved the WWF and Hulk Hogan, the Macho Man. Ooh, yeah, I loved the Macho Man. And my son had Jeff Hardy and The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. We loved all that stuff. But there was a Canadian wrestler, Chris Benoit, the Crippler.
Yeah.
And he... They say, I've watched a lot of shows on him, he was the nicest guy, they say, in the business, did anything for everybody, worked his way to success, but dealt with a lot of pain, like a lot of those wrestlers do. And he one day got up and killed his little infant son and his wife and then himself, just out of the blue. And now, I think learning about it after the fact, it's like a lot of these NFL players that kind of go crazy and bad because it's the damage, right? Their brains get hit, and it's causing problems. And I think that's what happened with him.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's an industry that's broken. I kind of got away from, and listen, I know wrestling's fake. It's just something to watch. It was fun. But I had to stop because, you know, 80% of the wrestlers I liked as a kid are all dead.
They're all dead. Like the steroids and the steroid rages and all the anger stuff that was going on.
They just all die young, suicide, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's happening.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember I bought my youngest son two replica championship belts. They were beautiful. I still have them. They look just like the real ones. Like Coco, he took them to school when he was young, and the teacher said, "Oh, was your dad a championship wrestler?"
Yeah.
And I was always mad at him. The answer is yes, he was.
Yeah. But, I don't usually smoke on the thing, but I don't know. I'm going away. Yeah.
I'm not allowed to vape on the Kingsdown, but I'm gonna vape on mine. In case anyone from Kingsdown's listening, I do agree with that. I never even thought about it. It's not a verb. You get it's just because you're home, so you think you're home or in your car or wherever.
Yeah.
If you're having a business meeting, my boss said it. He was right. You wouldn't do this if you were sitting here, and he's right. It's disrespectful, but it didn't mean for it to be. But
no.
But no, if we can't smoke during this topic, who can, you know?
I know. Oh, boy. I mean.
And I'd like to switch to death.
Yeah.
Because it's so much lighter. Yeah. But you do know you did have something to bring, because I know you have felt, you know, a little suicidal at times.
I have. And we talked about this on the weekend.
You helped me with mine. So you do have some insight on the subject for sure.
I do. And there have certainly been times in the last few years where I've contemplated it. I mean, it's, yeah, it's about, it's really a big internalization of pain and suffering, and mostly of what I've caused to other people. That I don't want to do that to them anymore. And sometimes it has a lot to do with fear around, you know, getting out of a place that I'm in, and whether or not I can do that. I've never actually gotten to the point where I like have gone through with any of the actions, but the thoughts have been there. At one point, I think I thought pills would be the best way, like to just go to sleep. But I've always kind of felt like having somebody to have to find you, that's just, God. And you just talked about it. So
We talked about this. I've looked into it. I've researched it more than I should have, and I never come up with a good way.
I told you drowning. I feel like drowning is so, like,
but they say it's awful.
I've always, I don't know how they work these things out, but apparently it's very painful. I don't know how you figure that out, but I've always had a real attraction to the ocean or water, but especially the ocean. And I'm born in July. I'm Cancer, the crab. I've always loved the ocean. And I just kind of figure, like, if I just swam out far enough until I couldn't swim and you just go under.
My mom was a Cancer. Isn't that funny?
And so I just feel like, well, then, you know, maybe they don't even find you. Like, you just drift off and maybe a shark eats. I don't know.
I used to take the ferry.
I'm laughing about it. It's not. Well, it's not a joking it's not matter.
Funny, but what are you going to do? You might as well laugh. It's funny. And I'm not a licensed therapist by any means. My sister would probably be mad at me because she is, but if you go see a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a therapist and you say suicide, it's almost like they have to, by law almost, or by hypocritical oath, that they have to call somebody. They got to say, okay, if you're going to hurt yourself or someone else, we have to call an ambulance. We have to get you somewhere. We have to get you help. I understand that. But I also feel there's a, unless I am really telling you, listen, I'm going to go home right now. I've got a gun loaded. I'm going to do this, this, and this. Yeah. I think it should be allowed to be talked about, because I have gone to a lot of therapy and I've wanted to tell this person I'm feeling suicidal, but I don't tell them that because I know they're going to overreact and start doing this. And I just want to tell them that I'm thinking about it. I think there should be a way to talk about it without going ballistic.
I did it. I talked to my therapist about it 2 weeks ago.
What'd she do?
It's a he. And he said, are you okay? He said, I have to give you this phone number. And he did. So we did talk about it, and it didn't turn into a panic.
Because you should be allowed to talk about it.
Yeah. And we worked through it. You know, he always talks about, name it to tame it. That's his kind of his mantra. So you name the feelings that you're having in order to tame them. So I said, look, I feel incredibly fucking lonely. I feel incredibly fucking sad, and I don't know what to do with it. And he tells me to kind of be in it, know that it's going to be okay, know that we're working on it, know that it will get better, and that, you know, suicide isn't, it's not the thing to do. Just like you, people can get through sadness and get to the other side of it.
I've used it almost as therapy, though, Chris. This is going to sound crazy, and I'm sorry if I'm triggering anybody.
Yeah.
Sometimes when things are so bad in my mind and my life, I will use it as like, well, I'll get through the day because, you know what? I could always just kill myself and end it. So what the hell? It's always like an ace in your pocket. You're up your sleeve. Right. You know, I always got that. You know,
right.
And that sounds awful.
Yeah.
But I think that can be almost therapeutic. Like, oh, well, you know. There's always a way out, you know.
Yeah.
And I know any sane, normal person if that exists, is thinking right now, Sean, are you out of your mind? But I'm just speaking my truth. Do you ever get, you were reading the definitions of suicide, and there's one part that you said that clicked off me, because sometimes I'll get this like, well, I'll show them. They'll be sorry. You know, They'll all be sorry now they didn't help me. They'll be sorry now they didn't, you know, that's a very immature way to look at things. But, you know, sometimes it's just like, well, I'll show them, you know. I don't know who they are or what
part
I'm
was
showing.
it? Sometimes a way for people to escape pain or suffering. I don't know which
Oh,
part
there's
of it.
something there, egotistical maybe, or.
Egotistic, altruistic, that part.
Yeah, read that one.
Well, those were the four types.
Yeah.
So,
What about the egotistical one? Read that definition. Does it say?
or socially disoriented? No, not that one. Altruism, disinterested, selfless concern for the well-being of others.
Could have been that one. Yeah.
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 Something you said, something you read made me think of it. But because we're going to call this suicide and death, when I was thinking about this episode with death, I mean, you know, I've had other deaths, but my mom was my big one. But and there's another one where my little cousin got killed. But I'm not comfortable talking about that because her mom's still around, and it's not my business to talk about.
Right.
But you know, I did lose my little cousin. She was on the back of my dad's Sea-Doo, and he ran to a bridge. And a lot of people
Yeah.
know the story, but I would be in a puddle talking about it, and it's not my place to talk about. But it. You know, we kind of touched on it, losing a little one, a young person, 12
Yeah.
year old. It doesn't make sense. I mean, I used to babysit her. She was a doll. I loved her so much. And to lose her little smile, I mean, oh my God. I got pictures from my wedding with her. I love that little kid so much, you know. But anyway, but I was thinking about you because,
Yeah.
you know, this is our podcast. And the one I always think about is your dad, you know, because you
Yeah.
talked about your dad's
Yeah.
death a lot.
Yeah, we've talked about this. My dad died of cancer. He died in our home. And it was such a strange process to go through because he really had come to an acceptance, and he talked a lot about it before he really was bedridden and stuff. He mentioned it numerous times to me, and he said, nature has a way of preparing people for death by creating a world where they no longer understand. He said that so many times. I thought, what does that like? I feel like he had basically
That's
given
heavy.
up. He had given up. Like, I talk about him and I love him. I love, you know, who he was, but he was difficult. He
Can you
had
say that again? Nature has a way of what?
preparing you for death by creating a world that you no longer understand. It was something like along those lines.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were saying he was difficult, right? At times, or
He had a lot of anxiety. He was very stressful. My parents also argued a lot when we were kids. Sometimes it felt very unsafe. I know I have a lot of shit because of that. He just seemed to always be worrying. He worried about money. He worried about making sure everybody was taken care of. And I told you, his dad died when he was young. They came back from Africa. His mom sent him straight to boarding school, and that was it. That he never went home at the age of 8 or something.
my
So I think he had a
God,
lot of
Jason.
abandonment stuff.
How would he know how to bring up a family? What would he know
I
about it?
have no idea. There's no way. There's no way.
Yeah,
You know?
that's true.
And my mom was the youngest of seven. She was very, like, probably very babied. I don't think she had, she was a great mom, don't get me wrong, but between the two of them, they were, like, you talk about it in episodes in the past, they were kids.
Right, kids having kids.
They were kids having kids. And he struggled with cancer for a long time. In his 40s, he had colon cancer. They removed part of his colon. Eventually he got prostate cancer, which then spread to his lymphatic system. And just the whole process of watching him die in our living room, like literally in a bed in our living room, he got all swollen and like it was I mean, there were good things about it in a way because we all knew the end was coming. we could talk about certain things. He figured out his tombstone, which I forgot on that one episode, but
I love it.
And yeah,
I'm a bookman, Jets fan,
good friend and family man.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
But he was I always get these wrong, either agnostic or atheist. He didn't believe in God. He didn't believe in heaven or any of those things.
Atheist. Which I
always kind of found a bit sad, because when I go to talk to him, I feel like he can hear me. Sometimes I'm ashamed of who I am and what I've done, and I don't necessarily, I kind of like go, you're not watching me, are you? Like, but, and when I do talk to him and I tell him I love him, and then I do want him to hear me. So there are good things in all of that. But man, it was such a fucked up thing, because I might as well tell it. I mean, anybody who knows my family knows this. He had a couple of big insurance policies, and they were going to end. They were going to expire on his 70th birthday. His birthday is April 12th. And near the end, like, it was really dragging on. Like, he was on morphine. He was basically unconscious. Like, it was really tough. But he didn't die until April the 9th, 3 days short of. And like, if that, but my mom, like, these were decent policies. If those didn't come through, like, we would have had problems.
Wow.
He knew that. He knew, like, I could, like, he died.
You think he let himself go?
Yeah. How messed up is that?
Wow. He'd like to take it right to the wire, eh? Like to make a
big
chunk.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Thank goodness.
Good,
I mean,
Lord.
You know, you don't want to ever wish someone to die, but I mean, he's gone anyway. Thank God.
Away. And then afterwards, it turned out that he had lied on one of the policies. Whether or not he did it on purpose, I don't know. But the insurance company, they reviewed it, and they weren't going to pay the money out. And eventually, a gentleman that I knew went to bat for us, and they ended up paying half of it, which wasn't as great, but it was a big relief. And after that, I was very sad. I still had a lot of regrets. We had a good relationship as adults. We played golf, which was one of our real passions together. But I kind of always felt like I was a bit of a letdown to him. I didn't have kids. I didn't maybe, I don't know, marry the right women, or, you know, years later after I'd broken up with my first wife, he's like, you know, I really liked her a lot. And I just was like, what? You fucking never said that when we were married. Like, I couldn't believe it.
I think you're probably right. I think you probably did let him down. I think you.
Thanks.
Of course you didn't let him down. I bet you would. I'm not just saying this. I bet you would smile so big if you knew how proud he was of you. I bet you he was proud as fuck of you, buddy. I just don't think he knew how to say it, just because of the way he was brought up.
That's exactly right. Yeah,
absolutely. Of course he was proud of you. You guys had business together. I mean, I know he loved you and was proud of you. I know he did.
I do too. In my heart of hearts, I do. We didn't I can barely remember hugging. Like, he didn't tell me he loved me very much. And so there was all that stuff, but that's just all shit. That's just all bullshit men stuff that, oh, stiff upper lip, be strong, do all that. You know, it's just bullshit stuff. And it doesn't serve any of us well.
You know, something weird in my family. You know, I kissed my parents goodnight.
Yeah.
Until I was 19.
Every night.
The rule was, I remember coming home stoned out of my gourd, and I went upstairs, my mom and dad being in bed, went in, hugged them both, kissed them both, said goodnight every fucking night. But you know what? It's right. A nice thing.
It is for sure.
It's just what we did.
I just want to touch quickly on one other individual, because after my dad died, there was this great guy in Aurora. He was a friend of my dad's. His name was Len Jones. Almost became like my dad's replacement.
Yeah.
After my dad passed away. And then tragically, about 3 months later, we were all going to a golf tournament, and he was going to be there. And another friend of ours called me, and he said, Leonard died last night. Oh. And I was like, and I actually was like, Leonard who? Like nobody called him Leonard.
Right.
He's like Len Jones. And the strange thing was, I had seen him the night before. We were at the pub, and I said, "Oh yeah, I look forward to seeing you in the morning." And you know what he said to me? He said, "If I make it." Yeah. Yeah, I think he had a lot of stuff going on that he wasn't talking to people about. He went home. He was, you know, he was an alcoholic, but he was always funny and laughing, and like he was never angry or mean or anything. And he went home and he got into his lazy boy and he fell asleep and he never woke up. And he said that night, if I make it. And I was like, and then I get the call the next morning and I was like, and he's gone. I was just like, I felt like I lost another dad. Like
3 months later.
3 months later. And it took me a long time to recover from both of those. I spoke at my dad's funeral, of course. I spoke at Len's funeral as well, which was a privilege and an honor. It took a long time for me to find closure, especially on my dad. I talked about it. I didn't find closure until this, like last year.
Yeah.
It was a dark every year. I told you, because he died on the 9th and his birthday was the 12th and the Masters was on and all this shit, all this tie in. And I was just like, okay, here we go. Glug, glug, glug,
yeah.
Glug, glug, glug.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to hide. I'm going to hide and mask all this. But
today, now you see the Masters, you smile.
I do. And I thank God. And Dave Purdy, text him every year on the 9th of April, 1 year to the day. Dave Purdy got me down to the Masters. On April the 9th, I went to the practice round, had a little picture of my dad. I buried it on the golf course, and that was one of the greatest days of my life.
That's fantastic.
So beautiful.
Purdy's a good guy, eh?
He's a great guy. Yeah. That's the second shout out that we've got in 2 weeks.
That's right.
I told him. He texted with me. I texted with him the other day, and he's –
That's cool. That's so
cool. He asked if you slept in your bed, though, Sean.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Well,
yeah, I know.
I'm going to have to do it pretty soon. I'm putting too much pressure on everyone. That's good, though. Maybe
I got to tell you, he's like, just tell him to hook the leg, man. Hook the leg.
God, he sounds like James now.
He does.
Mike
yeah.
Always cracked me up if I'd say something serious. He'd always say something and just, oh, man, just – he always did a great thing to say to make me laugh anyway. Well, you know what? I feel bad about both of those, especially losing Len after your dad so quickly. But I'm glad you shared that. I mean, that's a lot, man. I'm sitting here, you know, we haven't got, I don't even know what time it is, but I'm sure we don't have time to talk about it. I think we're wrapping up, but I could, you know, we say this every podcast, there should be another one, but I mean, I won't start because I haven't got time, but like my mother-in-law, she took my mom's place and I loved her so much, and her death was awful. And I'll talk about some other time, you know.
When did that happen?
That was a few years ago now. Time flies. Probably 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
Shonda Summer going, no, you idiot, it's 8 or whatever, you know, but you know, the hospital just said she's dying and they stopped feeding her and stopped giving her water. And we just watched her die. And they said it was going to be like 24 hours. It was like a week. It was the most horrendous, cruel, awful. Like, why in this country, we're not allowed to just say, okay, everybody agrees that this person's done. Let's put them, give them enough morphine to kill them and be done with this. Like, why are we torture people? I will never understand.
They do it in certain countries.
They should do it in every country.
Switzerland, they do it, assisted suicide. I think Sweden as well, some of the Nordic countries. But I talked to this is another person that died. My ex-father-in-law, he died this year. Great man, wonderful influence on my life.
Oh, yeah, Christine's dad.
Christine's dad and her mom. But he told me that in a lot of countries, because people get sort of, they don't have family around and they're sitting in a hospital, that the doctors actually, they kill them, basically. They call it assisted suicide, but they kill them. And so that raised a lot of
it would have to be very carefully monitored with lots of rules.
Yeah.
But there's got to be a way. There's got to be a happy medium there somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know, you know, I know going back hundreds of years ago, I mean, that's where all those sayings come, saved by the bell, you know, they used to bury you with a string tied to your finger, hooked to a bell, because you were still alive. I mean, I don't know. I get it, but this situation was, there was no question. And everybody involved knew there was no question. I don't know why we had to make her suffer, but what do I know? I start rambling on anything. I realize, okay, Sean, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about most things. But anyway, it's just my feelings. It's just my opinion. You know, it is. This is going to be a tough day for me. We've talked about a lot, but I honestly, same way when I run my group, if we help one person, it's worth it. You imagine if this podcast, this stupid little podcast that you and I are doing for ourselves, if one person got helped by this or saved, then it's worth every bit of my pain or,
feelings,
you know, it's so important.
I think to circle back around a little bit, just the phone number again.
988.
988. I think we've both touched on it, just to know that there isn't always going to be a reason to keep on going. And I know we've talked about it in previous podcasts, because I mentioned the seven states of suffering in Buddhism. And I just, like, here they are again: old age, separation from someone or something you love. That's a big one. Birth, sickness, death, not being able to achieve your desires, and contact with someone or something you dislike. These are all states of suffering, but there is relief from those suffering, and there is ways to get out of that. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things, and we've talked about this in a number of episodes, is to try as hard as you can to love yourself, love who you are, love the good things in your life, look at the good things. You know, we get in our heads, we beat ourselves up, and we look for a way out, but there are other ways out, you know, there really is.
And hope is a big part of it. Cause you just said there are answers to all those, and you're right. But you've got to remember, you might not be able to see or conceive of the answer, but you've got to have faith that it is there somewhere, and you never know. Like 99% of everything you worry about never happens, you know, like, I right now feel like I'm in a situation I can't get out of, but I've got to get up every day and just keep fighting and hoping and do the best I can. I mean,
chip away.
And then there's also, I mean, and we could have I won't go too far down it again, but like drugs, and there's other things that can, and I don't mean like heroin. A friend of mine, I won't say his name, even though it's not a secret, but he worked at a store in Halifax, knew him 20 some years, knew my dad. He knew my dad longer. Salesman on the floor. Great guy. Good guy. Like he was a good guy, but he rubbed people the wrong way. He was a salesman, and I think he'd steal sales, and he liked to grind you, including me, but you know, he had a big heart. He just was one of those guys, an old salesman. Right.
Yeah.
And he was taking drugs for these pains he was having, I think, in his hands.
Yeah.
And one of the side effects on these drugs, and I've taken a couple drugs like this, still do, one of the side effects, it can increase suicidal thoughts.
Right.
And he called his doctor. His doctor was out of town. He was talking to his therapist. I don't know any other detail. I don't know well enough, but I know that he told his wife that he was going to go home in 2 days and hang himself in their front doorway. And this is a guy that was never talked about suicide in his life and did not come off as depressed. And 2 days later, he went home and hung himself in his doorway.
Wow.
And me and Dad and Mike James went to his funeral, and it was sir fucking real. Like, I'm telling you, man, it was unbelievable. To this day, I can't believe it. I used to go to his house for dinner. Like, I don't understand it, but I'm not sure that I think that was a chemical reaction to something he was taking. I don't think it was because he was suicidal. I think something got in his system and fucked with him. I really do.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, at least I think we're, by talking about it, we're kind of we're putting it in the forefront. We're talking about how we feel, how we think. Like, I think when you really internalize it like that, maybe if that was the case, or whether it was a chemical imbalance, I don't know. That's,
you know, if you see something, say something. You know, yeah. we just said 988, and I'm saying this to everybody that knows me. If you need to call someone, if you're suicidal, call me. I will take the call. I will talk to you. Call somebody. Connection is the main thing. It's just to call someone. Don't get too isolated that it goes too far. Call somebody, anybody.
Yeah.
And if you can't think of someone to call, 988, call them. I guarantee you there will be a person on the other end that will know what to say, you know, more than I will.
You said it earlier. I mean, you called me. I've called you. I called you, you know, and we've helped each other. So
you talk to someone. And you know what? There's probably people like my best friend since I was a kid is Rob, and he's still my buddy. He's still my friend. I mean, we've been best friends since grade two. I literally came to Moncton from Nova Scotia. I was shy. The teacher in grade two said, I'm going to assign you a buddy. He's going to show you around the school.
Yeah.
Well, he was my best man. He's been through everything in my life. He's coming over this weekend to play darts. I mean, I remember my wedding. I said, the teacher said, you're off the hook, brother. Like, okay.
Yeah.
He takes his job seriously, but I love him very much. Awesome. And he's been there for me through thick and thin. But I mean, sometimes, you know, maybe he's who I should have called that day, but sometimes I feel like I was almost too much history and closeness with him. Like, I don't know if I could do that to him, you know, like I felt like you and I had a different connection at the time, you know, and that's, I guess my point is that it might not be the person you call might not be who you think you'd call, but that's okay. Call them anyway. You know,
for sure.
I don't think there's many people that would say, turn you down.
That's one of the joys of therapy is that when you do talk to somebody that is a professional, there's no judgment in it. They're
right.
All they're trying to do is help you. That's it. There's no right. questioning. There's no like, oh, you fell off and you drink. They don't care. They don't care. All they want is for you to get better.
Right.
That's it. That's a great place to be. And and again, anyone who can find a therapist, get a therapist, do the work, please do the work.
And be open.
And
everybody, and this is REM, but everybody hurts, man. Like we all,
100%.
There's nothing that you and I have said here today that we have monopoly on something. Oh my
There's God. No human Everybody. Being on the earth that has not suffered in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
Not a chance.
And you know, a lot of people like you and me, we were brought up by kids. And I remember my parents fighting. You said it about your parents. It was the worst thing in the world. I hated it so much.
So much fear.
You know what? I went and did it to my kids. Me and Charlie would fight.
A little bit with Christine, too, sure.
And all I can think of, and my son called me on that.
Probably a lot, actually.
And I just like, I can't believe I did that to my kids. I can't believe it. But I was overweight. I was having some chemical reactions. I would get really upset really fast. My sugars would drop. That all sounds like excuses. It's just part of it. But sure. I was scared. I was still trying to figure out how to be a son. And I was way too focused on my parents and then my mom. And then I was a terrible husband. I'm not the man I am now is not who I was then. I think I'm a better husband. I'm better at some stuff, but you know, we were kids bringing up kids and there's that old saying, hurt people, hurt people. And that's well, all there was to it. You know, your dad was a hurt person and he hurt people. And I was a hurt person. And I hurt people. And
yeah,
I don't know.
That's why I said the closer you can get to loving yourself, the more you can love others.
Yeah,
that's real. That is real.
Well, Chris and Purdy, I'm trying.
Yes, I know. Hook the leg, Sean. Hook the leg.
That's gonna be my new saying. Hook the leg. Hook the leg. Well, listen, we're gonna have to say goodbye.
Thanks,
to talk for the rest of the day. I think more than ever, I want you to know I love you. I do.
Yeah, you do. I love you too, man. And I appreciate you sharing this stuff. It's a lot, and we always try. It's just we're trying to help ourselves, which is selfish, but it's okay. And we're trying to help anybody else that we can out there. So
absolutely. Well, think about a subject for next week.
All right.
I was thinking maybe we'll have to have like a wild card episode where we just talk about whatever we feel like talking about.
Our favorite national parks or something. Really light reviews of Airbnbs we've stayed in. I don't know.
Anyway. World's worst airports. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
JFK. No, LaGuardia. Yeah. I hate LaGuardia. All right, take care of yourself. I'll be talking to you.
Sounds great, man.